Hello, everyone. You are in luck. This is a bonus podcast. You're joining me and Courtney here for our DMH Book Club podcast of the month, all about The Princess Companion. Hello, Courtney.
Hello. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for asking.
So we kind of are doing a summer series with these books. They're by Melanie Cellier. C-E-L-L-I-E-R.
I mean, I'm just going Cellier, like the restaurant.
I don't know if I could do that faux French accent like that. But this is the first in the series. Series is The Four Kingdoms. This is The Princess Companion. It's a retelling of The Princess and the Pea. So we're still doing fairy tales, not necessarily ones that are solely Disney related now. But we figured this would kind of be like a fun little break to still do fairy tales without sticking to originals.
Right. Yeah. We've been listening to some feedback in the group, and we were doing our classic literature for a bit, and it seemed like everybody needed a break. So we're doing something a little bit more easy reading and modern, maybe not in setting, but in language, I suppose. It seems like it's been a little bit easier on the group.
Yeah. I think these are definitely YA novels, which is good. I mean, really, if nothing else, a fairy tale is pure escapism, and this is that at its best, I would say.
Yeah, you bet.
But it's nice to read something that's easy and makes you feel good.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's... before we get into the book itself, I just want to go real quick, just kind of give a summary of what it's based on. The Princess and the Pea was a Hans Christian Andersen story. It is basically kind of told from the prince's perspective. The prince is trying to find a princess. None of the people that he meets or is, I don't know, interviewing is a bad word, but you know what I mean, entertaining...
Yeah.
To be a princess is not quite right. He's like Goldilocks. They're either, you know, bad table manners, too fat, too thin, too beautiful, not too beautiful, whatever. And he somehow comes along the trick, I think it's through his mother. If a princess is sensitive enough and proper enough, she will feel a pea under her mattress, no matter how thick the mattress is or how many mattresses there are on top of said pea. So one stormy night, stranger stumbles in to the castle. She claims she is a princess. The prince's mother says, "We shall test that." She puts the pea under the 20 mattresses, and in the morning, the traveler says, oh, she could not sleep a wink. She had a restless night's sleep because something was just bothering her under the mattress. And the prince and the queen think, this is it. This must be the real princess, because only somebody of such royalty could feel said, could be so sensitive as to feel this little pea. And I don't know, they live happily ever after. So it's a really weird story, but I mean, I don't know. I guess it's supposed to be that royalty is so fair and sensitive that they'll feel even the slightest thing that would make them uncomfortable.
I mean, I don't know. We have princesses that are real princesses in this book who don't feel the pee, so.
Yeah, so I don't know. But I like this book because they flesh out that fairy tale, and they do, I think, a little bit better with it, in my opinion. So we have our main character whose viewpoint the story is told from, Alyssa. She is a woodcutter's daughter. So typical stereotype if there ever was one.
Yep, there you have it.
And then she is the same thing, stuck in a storm in the woods late one night, and is stumbles upon a castle and is asked to be let in, and the story goes from there.
Right. Yeah. She comes in, and you know, you get your classic mistaken identity thing where, you know, they think she's a princess. They put her in the princess room. And she gets, you know, put in the most lavish pajamas she's ever worn and has the worst night's sleep of her life because, you know, she's sleeping on that pee.
Yeah, which was given to the queen after the queen had axed her fairy godmother. So there's this whole kind of mythos set up in this world where fairy godmothers are a thing. They are there to help prince and princesses, all for true love and the benefit of the kingdoms.
And they bestow blessings on children at their birth.
Yes, yes. All children are just the royal?
The royal children.
Right? Okay. Yeah. So the queen, we find in the very beginning, was had help from her fairy godmother. She asked her again for help, but now this time for her son, in order for her son to find a proper princess. He's, you know, of that age. He needs to start thinking about marriage. So she asks the fairy godmother for help. The fairy godmother gives her the pea and says, you know, same thing. If the true princess or his true match or however it is, you know, will be the one that is uncomfortable by this.
Right.
And then we have Alyssa. She is very down to earth, very no nonsense, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't let the fact that she is kind of brought into this royal family by kind of mistake get to her. She finds her way to become the younger princesses, their twins. They are outgrown their nanny, but now they need somebody to help take care of them. So Alyssa kind of turns into the princess's companion. And she is kind of there to help take care of them and watch over them because they also are very mischievous and underfoot, for lack of a better word.
Right. And she uses her... I would say that the best description for her, if you haven't read this book, is she's pretty much Belle.
Mm.
She uses her storytelling abilities and her love of reading to kind of mold these princesses. That's part of what she thinks her task is as princess companion, is teaching these young princesses how to be proper and, you know, teaching them good virtues and morals.
Yeah. Yeah. And not just like virtues and morals of princesses, but just like of decent human beings. And she constantly calls out like, you know, she'll tell them stories about princesses who are too vain or who are too, you know, snotty or, you know, things like that, to kind of show them, you know, okay, if you're nice to everybody, that's how you get to become, like, you know, a good person, and to kind of keep their heads from getting too big. You know, yeah, they're princesses and they have responsibilities, but they can also, you know, be kind to the quote-unquote little people.
Right.
And then, of course, all tied up in this is the prince, Max. He initially comes off as being very rude and doesn't like Alyssa, but then they wind up forming, from Alyssa's point of view, a really good friendship.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's Alyssa's point of view. Anybody else reading this book or outside the situation knows what's happening. I thought it was interesting that Max was so standoffish toward her at the beginning, but I guess the explanation for that is that he was instantly like attracted to her and knew that it couldn't go anywhere. So he was just kind of pushing it away and just saying like, I'm just going to be a jerk so that nothing can possibly even come of it.
Yeah. Like he won't lead her on or anything like that. But I think it's interesting because I feel like we found out, midway through the book that the queen came kind of from humble origins, so like it's not really unheard of for royalty to marry, you know, non-royalty. So I was wondering like why it was such a, like, I don't know, like a taboo to, you know, have that attraction and that bond, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of seems like Ella, Ella is the prince's mom and Ella is Max's mom. It seems like she was really assertive about making sure that he didn't make that same mistake. I mean, that's the whole reason she went to the fairy godmother to get the pea, so that he didn't make the same mistake of marrying a peasant.
Yeah.
So he probably learned from a young age, and that was instilled in him, that he has to marry a princess. So I'm sure it was a matter of him trying to appease his parents.
Yeah, which is interesting, because like we hear Ella's story, Queen Eleanor, Ella, and how she is interpreting the fact that, you know, King Henry did a bad thing by marrying her since she wasn't royalty. But it seems like really more of that was her like misinterpretation. Like both, we got to hear both sides of the story, the king's version of how the queen was acting and the queen's version of like why she was acting a certain way and how the king was acting. And it was really just a bunch of miscommunication. And like, you know, he would try and like push her to be more involved, and she was like, I don't know anything, why are you doing this to me? And she would, you know, withdraw. And like, it was just like it was a really weird situation that I feel like if they had just sat down and talked about it, it would have been really easily resolved. But because in Henry's mind, in the king's mind, it doesn't seem like he thinks he made a mistake, you know?
Yeah, and I don't think he did feel that way, but I think that it was just her insecurities. Mm-hmm. I love that we got to see the other side of the Cinderella story here.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause we got to see her, like, what developed after that, and what developed from her being a peasant, and what made this story interesting. And, you know, rather than just, oh, well, you have to marry a princess because you have to marry a princess, we had more background than that. We had Cinderella who married and became queen really fast after the king's parents passed away, and she's never been equipped to, or she's felt that she's never been equipped to rule alongside the king. So she has all these insecurities that she harbors, and she doesn't want to put, I think, you know, beyond not giving Max an inadequate spouse, she doesn't want to put another woman through what she's gone through with all the, you know, her feelings of inadequacy, and just feeling like she's, I guess, unintelligent in the ways that she's supposed to be a queen.
Yeah. But of course, like, the king doesn't feel that way, and he's like really confused as to why she would even feel that way. And I don't know. I thought it was interesting to kind of get like that, you know, post happily ever after for the Cinderella story. And I like how they kind of like connected it, you know, in here, like to kind of be like, okay, now this is a different take on that idea, you know, that happily ever after can kind of be bumpy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's good and realistic. I don't like the way that one time I didn't like Alyssa in this book was when she put Eleanor in the secret room in the office.
Yeah, I mean, I guess her idea was like, oh, well, she'll just hear how the king speaks of her, realize he doesn't hate her like she thinks he does, and it'll all be okay. But it's like, no, she's still blinded by her insecurities. And of course, like, the king sees her, you know, Eleanor's withdrawal or anything like that as, you know, her being cold instead of like, oh, she's shy or insecure or worried about letting him down. So the way that he spoke about her wasn't the best. So, yeah, it was like, I feel like she had good intentions, but she didn't think through the, like, how it would be interpreted, you know?
Yeah, she didn't have any, like, any forethought or insight into, she just thinks the best of people, I think. Mm-hmm. I think in general, Alyssa, she's very perceptive. So the king has put his trust in her at this point. She already knows about the secret room. She's been in the secret room spying on meetings, whatever. So the king's put his trust in her, so she, I think, explicitly trusted that the king would never say anything bad about his wife. But in turn, I mean, I felt that to be really, really dumb.
Yeah, but what frustrated me even more after that was, like, even though the king was like, okay, no, I trust you because you had, like, this intuition before, you found out the traitor when we were in the winter castle. So now that we're in the summer palace, you know, I need your help because there's more people. And these, you know, princesses and their crew are going to be trying to marry my son. So I'm going to trust you to come in and give me your insight. And then when she gives him her insight about Princess Ava, he's like, no, you just don't like her because she's, like, perfect. It's like, that, no, like, you specifically asked her about something, and just because the, you know, I don't know what the guy from that kingdom was called, like, his interaction with the king was fine, but the princess was the one that was giving Elisa the bad vibes. And it's like, you're just going to brush off her feelings because you think she's jealous? Like, I don't know.
At that point, the queen already knew that Ava supposedly had a bad night's sleep. So the queen and the king, they both knew what was going on. So if at that point the queen knew that Ava had a bad night's sleep, the queen's pressuring the king and saying, like, this is the right girl. Like, I know this is right. So that combined with the fact that the king and the queen definitely knew that something could at least have been going on with Max and Alyssa, I think that's what contributed to him making that call. I mean, it's not, you can't tell somebody one thing and then act a totally different way. Like, that's not fair.
Yeah.
But I think that there were more factors at play there.
Yeah, it was just weird. I got really, like, annoyed at that part. I was like, you know, just listen. Because, again, nobody listened, like, you know, when nobody listens to each other, that's when things go, you know, backwards. Right.
Yeah.
But speaking of Princess Ava, she is the third and final girl. We have Marie from Northelm comes in first. Then we have Celeste. And then Ava comes in. Ava's the only one who says she has had a bad night's sleep. So the queen automatically thinks that she must be the one because she felt the pee. But Alyssa does get a weird vibe from her. Like we had said, Alyssa already ousted a traitor. We don't know who the traitor was working for. Turns out it is this man, Jorgen, however you want to pronounce his name, who is also working with Princess Ava. And it's basically, Ava is the villain here. She's going to try and marry Max and then take over the kingdom by force. So she comes off really terrible in the book. She ties up Alyssa, locks her in a closet. I do have to give Alyssa some credit for being resilient through all of that. I don't know if I would have been.
She's really evil. I mean, I haven't read into the next one yet, so I don't know any of that, but she comes off as super, super evil. And then I don't remember, did Alyssa overhear her say she had a poor night's sleep?
I think she says it at breakfast, right? Breakfast, yeah, like in front of everyone.
So Alyssa was there.
Yeah.
So I don't understand. This was one of my major issues with this book. Alyssa sleeps on that bed before anybody else. Mm-hmm. She feels the spring or whatever. She tells Nanny that she had an uncomfortable night's sleep. And doesn't she tell Matilda as well?
Yeah, the maid, yeah. But she doesn't tell anybody who matters.
But why would somebody not have mentioned this? I don't like the way that all came to pass. It drove me nuts because then all of a sudden at the end it's like, she's like, oh, well, I just thought there was a bad spring in the mattress or whatever. Like, I really thought that there was going to be a point at which somebody spoke up on her behalf, or like somebody let slip something to somebody else. And then that kind of drove me nuts.
Yeah. It wasn't until like Ava was already ousted as the bad guy that they were like, oh yeah, she lied about feeling this because her spy like overheard the fairy godmother and the queen. So she knew what to say. And yeah, it frustrated me in the very beginning when Alyssa didn't say like, oh yeah, you know, the spring was just off in the mattress. Cause like, I guess she was trying to be, you know, nice to royalty, you know, how, you know, can't say anything bad if, you know, they gave you a place to stay, but still like she was with them for months and it never came out that first night, like something was wrong with the mattress. And yeah, that frustrated me too. Cause it was like, oh, if you had just said something. You know?
Yeah, it would have been over a long time ago. But I mean, then you would have had the end of the book. So I just like, if it just was weird. Like, if you're going to choose for the story to be the princess and the pea, and then you're not going to like make it about that in the long run, that was just very strange.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of seems to be this author's forte in terms of like what you think this is going to be about is not necessarily how it's going to play out. Like the next one, I believe is supposed to be a retelling of Red Riding Hood. And, yeah, it's, I don't know. It's a little weird. Just like this
Yeah, and I think it's great that she is using, you know, classic stories, things that we've all heard a million times, and she's putting her spin on it. But I hadn't really thought about that until, like, right now when we're talking about it. But if you're going to make it a Princess and the Beast P story, it should be about the P and not about all this other... I mean, at some point, it has to be about the P, and it never really was.
Yeah, it was... It wasn't as big of a front runner as it was in, like, the original fairy tale. It was definitely, like, a tertiary or more kind of issue. I also thought that there were some issues that were brought up that kind of went nowhere, like when Alyssa's going to the Summer Palace and she, like, visits with her aunt and her cousin, and then, like, they're there for a couple chapters, and then they're never there again. And it's just like, wait, but why did you introduce them then? Or why did you make her spend a lot of time with them and introduce her cousin and, like, go through all this stuff of, like, developing these characters for them to just be like, nah, forget it?
I can only suppose that she's going to bring those characters back in future books.
It's such a weird play, though, to be like, I'll introduce them now, and in 6 books you'll get them again. It's a weird...
I totally agree. It seemed like it was going to go somewhere, especially since they made such a big deal about Alyssa's cousin, or Max made such a big deal about Alyssa's cousin.
Yeah.
And then for him to, like, show up when Alyssa's sick, and, like, that's the last that you hear about any of them. It's just like, yeah, we don't even know if they went to the wedding.
Yeah.
We don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, it was really weird. I did like how they kind of helped Matilda's character. She, like, grows and isn't just, like, you know, stuck as a maid, like, not stuck as a maid, but stuck as that, like, typical, like, floofy kind of girl who's only interested in guys and, you know, doesn't have her head on straight because she just wants to get married. Like, they actually kind of really did a good job of developing her and giving her a really good purpose and a good arc in the overall story.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of women helping women in this book.
Mm.
That was one of the themes that I really liked. I mean, we definitely had women who weren't helping women and women that were, you know, we had Marissa, who was always waiting around to try to sabotage everything.
Yeah.
And then Ava obviously was the worst. But, you know, we had Alyssa and Ella. That was a super supportive relationship going both directions.
Mm-hmm.
Alyssa and the girls, that's a good positive female-to-female relationship. Alyssa and Matilda, Alyssa and Marie.
Yeah.
We just had a lot of, like, positive, like, female interactions, which is good. It was good to not see women just constantly being at each other's throats for no reason.
Yeah, just to be, like, catty or whatever.
Yeah.
And I really liked how, you know, Marie came in and, like, initially she was seen as, like, the foe, but then, like, it just turned out, like, that Alyssa and Marie were, like, happened to be really good friends, and they were like, you know what, let's keep up our friendship, even though, you know, Marie might not be Max's bride. Like, they're still going to be, you know, writing letters and corresponding and things like that. I enjoyed that aspect of it. And I really liked how they let Alyssa use her mind and come to the, you know, conclusions or problem solve without, like, having her hand held by anybody else, or, you know, without having a man to kind of bring her along the way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I do like how they made Alyssa, you know, like a good, well-developed character, even though she did act like a young 16 or 17 or whatever, or however old she was sometimes, and a little ditzy.
Yeah, yeah. I just thought she was a really good, strong character. I thought she had a lot of gumption. She wasn't afraid to fight with people. I mean, she held her tongue when she needed to, just, you know, out of station, I guess. Like, she knew that she was working for these people, so if she said something or acted a certain way to a certain person, that it wouldn't be favorable for her. So, I mean, that's also a form of intelligence. I don't know that I, you know, super agree with, like, the caste system, but she was just really strong, and she wasn't afraid to be herself, and she had, like, a good moral compass that she passed on to other people, and she was kind to everybody. unless they were not kind to her, and then they deserved it. So yeah. There's that.
Yeah, and I know somebody had also brought it up when we were having our, one of our threads. It seemed though like Max's character, and I'll even argue some of the other characters beyond Alyssa, weren't as well developed. Like Max was a little developed, but I feel like you could have gotten more from him.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there was a ton of time spent with Alyssa and not as much time spent on pretty much anybody else. I think the fact that I feel the way I feel about Max going from super cold to like his sudden switch to like wanting to be around Alyssa all the time and allowing her to call him by his first name. I mean, a lot of the behaviors he exhibits in the book, they're understandable from our perspective, but there's a lot of inference there. We don't really get many explanations about his behavior.
Yeah.
I think that's the case with a lot of the characters.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just because, you know, the author decided to write it strictly from Alyssa's point of view. Like, it is first person, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it would be hard for her to really give you much beyond, you know, her own interpretation. I mean, we get a couple of chapters where we get, like, you know, the prince and the queen's point of view, and a couple others, but I guess, yeah, like, the character development is hindered because of the point of view it's being told from.
But right. We don't have a narrator. If we had a narrator, we might have a little bit more information about everybody. But instead, we just get kind of bits and pieces here and there based on conversations Alyssa has with people and interactions she has.
Yeah. But it is good because, like you said, you do see her intuition and her ability to read people and her ability to kind of parse out who is being honest and who's being, you know, fake and things like that.
Right.
But yeah, what else did you think?
I was going to say that this book was very self-aware about a lot of fairy tale stereotypes, mm-hmm. but there was still a major focus on beauty as, like, that was still a major centerpiece in this book.
Yeah. Yeah, the twins and the mother, the queen, they're all described as, you know, golden hair with the curls. And even Alyssa was always, you know, mentioning how, even though she might have not thought it, like, everyone told her how beautiful she was. And of course, like, you know, the visiting princesses were all told, you know, we're all pretty much in the same vein of being beautiful, I think, except Marie. She was
except Marie. Yeah. And that bothered me a lot, because it's like, so Marie is, she was still described to be beautiful, but she was not your standard beautiful. She was tall. She had a big nose. You know, she was like kind of a statuesque woman, mm-hmm. rather than this stereotype, which they talk about over and over, blonde, curly hair, big blue eyes.
Yeah.
And, you know, Marie's the one who's not classically beautiful, and she ends up being the one who's, like, kind and smart and helpful.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, why can't you be both things? Or why do you have to be, like, why do you have to be any of that? Why are we even focusing on the way that somebody looks? And why does her lack of beauty have to be made up for with kindness and intelligence?
Yeah.
Like, I hate that focus.
I don't know. I don't know if it was because, like, the way the author was presenting it. So you had Marie first, who was, like, you know, not your typical princess beauty, but she was what you would want in a princess, being kind and smart and things like that. Then you have the second one, Celeste, who was very, you know, exotic beautiful, because she's from, like, the Southern Kingdom, so she has, you know, bronze skin, dark hair, all this stuff. But then they describe her as, like, being not very intelligent at all, so, like, you really couldn't carry on a conversation with her. And then you have Eva, who is your typical, you know, petite little beautiful blonde princess, who also, like, is smart and can carry on a conversation. So she's, like, that's why she is the biggest threat, because she is, like, I guess the quote-unquote embodiment of what you would want a princess to be, you know, beautiful and smart.
But then she's evil.
But then she's evil, yeah. So then you get, you know, Alyssa, who, while she's not a princess, she is beautiful, she is very smart, and she is kind and not evil.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know if it was done that way intentionally. It's frustrating, because it's like, oh, of course, you know, everyone tells Alyssa that she's gorgeous. It's like, well, what if she just, you know, what if she was just pretty and not, you know, it wasn't always pointed out to her, you know, because it was kind of just like, I don't know, you could just describe someone and it could just be, you know, your own interpretation of beauty.
Right. And why does it even have to be about that at all? Like, they could have never mentioned what she looked like. We still would have fallen in love with her character. Max still could have fallen in love with her character because she's funny and strong and smart. And, you know, none of the beauty part of it, I get that that comes into it because it's a fairy tale. But I just don't. I just wish it wasn't about that for once.
Yeah, especially because the typical fairy tales do focus so much on that, that if it this one, if the retelling didn't, that would have probably been better.
Yeah, I think so too, especially since the retelling was like, these princesses are too fat or too thin or like that's part of the description in the book.
Yeah.
Like, there's all this focus on beauty. Just don't make it about that at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you can.
I guess you can't.
If you're talking about fairy tales, but it would be nice. I mean, it would definitely be nice to get away from that a little bit.
Yeah.
I do like the whole problem solving and how everything kind of comes together at the end. I really thought the end was very quick, though. It was kind of like, we're all going to be in this room and everything's going to come together really, really quick. So I thought it was kind of rushed.
I thought so, too. I was looking at the amount of chapters I had left while I was reading through and I was like, so this is really literally all going to wrap up in like 6 pages.
Yep.
And that's going to be like, I've never liked books that were that way. I've always liked, I like a quicker resolution, but the fact that this book took so long with plot in the middle, it took us so long to get there. I mean, 33 chapters to get there or 32 chapters to get there. And then one chapter to really resolve the whole thing seemed rushed.
Yeah, because then it just became of, oh, well, this is what happened. Let me explain it to you instead of like finding things out, which I always enjoy more. Like finding out about Ava was really interesting to find out in like a sentence at the end that, oh, yeah, she lied because she her spy overheard. It's like, oh, well, like, why couldn't that have been something that like we had found out, you know, sooner than like the last page?
Yeah, it's something that unfolded too. Yeah. And like, you find it out situationally instead of just like, here's a sentence telling you what happened.
Yeah.
I guess that's why I felt so frustrated about the whole P thing with Alyssa too. Like at some point someone should have, like Nanny should have been in the room or Matilda should have been in the room. And there should have been like a whole scene that happened where it was like, oh, Alyssa, remember that time you said that thing? Or, you know, I'm not a writer.
But. Yeah. Or even like when, when Ava at breakfast said like how she slept uncomfortably, like Alyssa would have been like, oh yeah, you know, it must be that spring in the mattress. Like even if she had like just acknowledged that she also felt it, would have been really good, because then I feel like that would have been like a really good conflict to bring up. Like, oh, okay, both of them felt this. One of them's a princess, one of them's not. Like, how do you then decide who is the better princess, you know, if they both felt it?
Yeah, that would have been a good challenge for Ella, too. Because then at that point, she's the one who brought up this whole pee under the mattress thing. So if at that point she now has two girls who she is under the assumption have felt this pee, then there's some sort of dilemma that she has to deal with. I mean, we already had, I think aside from Alyssa, we probably got the most information about Eleanor. So I don't know if we needed more focus on Eleanor, but I still think that would have been an interesting thing to work out.
Yeah, it would have also been nice for her to work out her insecurities and like maybe come to a better understanding with her husband. Like, you know, like, look, you might have thought I was being cold, but I was really just shy. Like, you know, to actually have that entire, you know, them working through their problems and resolving it rather than like, as far as we know, they're still in the same spot at the end of the story.
Yeah, I mean, it's a voice issue for sure. The fact that it was written from Alyssa's point of view, a lot of these issues that we have with it are because of that entirely.
True, very true. I thought it was really interesting. Obviously, this is a newer book, so I'm sure that the author was influenced by other things. And if there were not 100% like Disney princess moments in this book, like there was definitely a scene where Max brought Alyssa into a huge library and
yeah,
all this stuff, and I was like, okay, well, that's Beauty and Beast. And then also like the towards the end where Alyssa comes into the ballroom and she has on her dress and everybody pauses and look up at her and like, oh, okay, we're going Cinderella again here. So I just thought it was really interesting how, you know, I mean, you kind of can't steal it, but you stole it. Like,
yeah, I mean, there's no new ideas anymore. Yeah. So, like, people are going to reuse things, but there were a lot of things that were basically direct quotations from stuff that, I mean, especially us as Disney fans and members of this book club are going to identify right off the bat. There were probably no less than five in this book that I was like, that's a direct lift.
Yep.
And there were three of them were from Beauty and the Beast. So yeah. I don't know. This author must be a massive Beauty and the Beast fan for this to be like the first one in the series. And she just loaded it all down with that. I don't know.
Which is interesting because it's a retelling of The Princess and the Pea, but yet it's just all Beauty and the Beast stuff.
Don't we get a Beauty and the Beast book later in this?
I believe so. I don't think it's soon. I think it's much later on.
Yeah. And then there's another series that's supposed to be like a sequel to this series that I just saw today. I didn't even know there was there were more books, but I guess there's, what is it called? Beyond the Four Kingdoms.
Yeah, I think that's where we get the Beauty and the Beast one, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, we do. And I'm excited about that series, actually. I'll probably keep reading them because I do like them. There's a retelling of the 12 Dancing Princesses, which I remember from when I was younger. There was a cartoon of that fairy tale, and I don't remember what the cartoon, like where the cartoon came from, but I absolutely loved that story. So I'm really excited to kind of see that reimagining.
Yeah, I mean, I'll keep reading these books. I don't have a reason not to. They're easy reads. They're entertaining. It's the kind of thing that I like to read. Like, I like to go on vacation and have a book with me. I'll just power through it in like 8 hours and just like move on to the next one. Just read a series of books in a week.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
I liked it too. And I'm a sucker for a series. So the fact that like this isn't the last time we'll get to see all these characters is fun for me. That's like always been my thing, has been fantasy series books. Like, I like one-offs, but give me a series and I'm done. Like, that's my jam. The longer, the better. Even though usually quality doesn't always win out with quantity, but we'll see.
Yeah, I can't do all series. Like, I started Game of Thrones. I got halfway through the second book and I was like, I can't do this. This is too dense. I had the same problem with Tolkien. I know a ton of people are not going to be happy about that, but Tolkien is too dense for me too. I can't do, you know, 60 page chapters full of describing what a mountain looks like or whatever. Like, that's just not for me. I prefer this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Something I can power through.
Yeah. And I do like it. It's definitely written for a younger audience. So I think we had a couple of people who were reading it that they could read with their kids or, you know, along with their kids, which is always like, you know, something nice. Or even if you don't read it along with your kids, I know we have a few people who have daughters. So like, you know, in a few years, if you bought the books, like you can give this to them and be like, here, you know, enjoy.
Yeah. I wouldn't hesitate to read this to a child at all.
Yeah. And I think it's great.
Thanks. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think it's great for them, like, if you give them a series to, like, really help foster their love of reading. Because, I don't know, there was a comment I read one time where it was like, you know, people don't like challenging books. We need to really, you know, force them to read challenging books so people like reading again. It's like, but people don't like reading because it's challenging. Like, you develop a love of reading because you get engrossed in the story. And, like, the only way to get engrossed is if it's, you know, accessible. And if it's dense and frustrating, like, you're not going to enjoy it.
Well, I think that's probably part of the reason that we had some complaints in the group, too, when we first started out, is we were reading literature. And if you're not used to reading literature, and if you don't have an inherent appreciation for that, that's not going to be fun. It's not going to be fun for you. So breaking that up, breaking up the, you know, Mr. Toads and, you know, Peter Pans or whatever we're reading with something like this, I think I think it's healthy and helpful, and engaging. And I hope more people join in and start reading these. Even if you haven't read the first one, you could power through that puppy in the amount of time that we're reading the second one, and you could still catch up with us. Yeah. And I don't think that it's necessary to read them all in order. So you can join in at any time.
Yeah, I mean, having finished the second one, I will say there are some elements that if you know from the first one, it's more helpful. They don't hide it. They explain it. So if you didn't read the first one, you'd figure out what's going on, or, you know, but like, I always just like to know what happened myself.
Yeah. And I think if you're a reader, you could, like I said, you could power through the first one. Once I got to the point where I just said, oh, forget it, I'm just going to keep reading, I read the last 23 chapters of this book in like, I don't know, 3 hours or something. I just went to town and I just finished the book off. So it's an easy read.
Yeah. And the chapters aren't very long. So like before you know it, you're 5 chapters and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Should just keep going. All right. So anything else you want to bring up with this one?
No, I just, I wanted to briefly mention for the next book.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, what is the name of the next book?
The Princess Fugitive.
Thank you. I didn't have it up. So we're starting The Princess Fugitive, and we're going to start that on Wednesday, July 11th. And we're going to do the beginning through chapter 11. So I'm just going to give you guys a brief rundown. We're going to do this book in this month because I think a lot of you have kept reading. So on the 18th of July, we're going to do chapters 12 through 22. And then on the 25th of July, we'll do chapters 23 through the end. That way we'll kind of be back in our month swing. And then Melissa's headed out on a trip, so we'll record the book podcast after she's back on August 1st, and then we'll get started with the novella for August.
Yeah, and the novella is going to be tinier, so we'll be able to finish everything up before, at least before the end of August, before some people are back in school, and then we'll kind of figure out how our summer reading program went, and if we want to do, you know, continue in the series or do something a little different come the fall and winter. We'll also post that schedule up in the group, so we'll all have that, and we'll all be ready for our live threads. And you guys have been really fun putting up your comments with our live threads, so I appreciate it. I appreciate all the interaction, and I hope you guys are still here for the rest of the summer reading.
Yeah, and please continue to give us feedback. You know, if you do like the books, if you don't like the books, if you have ideas for books in the future. I know we're coming up on the release of Mary Poppins in December, so that's probably something we're going to want to revisit and mm-hmm. see if anybody's interested in reading that. Yeah, just come on over to the group and post anytime you want. Let us know how you're feeling. And we're really happy to have you and to be doing this group.
Yep, yep. All right, so that was The Princess Companion. We'll be doing The Princess Fugitive next, and we will see you all in a few weeks for that book podcast. So until then, have a wonderful summer vacation. Bye-bye.
Bye.